Acts chapter 19, verse 23. Acts chapter 19, verse 23. And the same time there arose no small stir about that way. This morning I want us to think about that way. You'll notice from the verse that I've read that the church at Ephesus is headed for a lot of trouble because now the city has been stirred because of the influence, the preaching of Paul the Apostle has had on the inhabitants of the city and the threat that it presents to the worshipers of Diana. So this sermon is about Paul and the church at Ephesus and the big mess they got themselves into for preaching the truth. There was definite incompatibility between the church of God and the temple of Diana. And this incompatibility led eventually to confrontation. And this confrontation does not seem to be a coincidence in the mind of Paul. It seems to have been ordained. It seems to have been inevitable. As it seems to me that when the truth and when error are lifted up so highly as we see in the city of Ephesus, that is through the temple of God, which is the church of the living God, and the temple of Artemis or Diana, which is a temple erected to a goddess that houses the statue or idol that fell down from heaven, there's bound to be confrontation. Paul had plans to leave Ephesus. The turmoil over the burning of books, teaching curious arts, had all subsided. And Paul purposed a trip to Corinth and Macedonia, and then to Jerusalem, and then to Rome. And the word purpose, as it's used in verse 21, means to set to a place, to lay up in one's spirit, to resolve in mind. So Paul had literally set this trip in his spirit, in his soul, in his inner being. It was more than a casual planning. Paul meant to make it. He meant to make this trip. And the Bible tells us that he was going to pass through Macedonia and Achaia and go to Jerusalem. And after I've been there, I must also see Rome. But Paul has his plans delayed and interrupted. In verse 22, the Bible tells us that he sent into Macedonia two of them that ministered unto him, Timotheus and Erastus. But he himself stayed in Asia for a season. Paul intended, he purposed, he set in his soul plans to go to Achaia and Macedonia, Jerusalem, and Rome, but he sent two of his fellow helpers. While he himself stayed in Asia for a season. The explanation for Paul's staying in Ephesus at this particular time is given to us, and I thank God that it is, but it's given to us in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Paul writes to those at Corinth, which these are the people are part of the people whom he intended to visit, whom he purposed to see. In verse 5 of chapter 16 of 1 Corinthians, Paul writes, "Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia, and it may be that I will abide, yes, and winter with you, that you may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. For I will not see you now by the way. But I trust to tarry a while with you, if the Lord permit. But I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost." And here's his reason. "For a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries." What is this door that Paul speaks of here as being open to him at Ephesus? Well, it must be opportunity. And with opportunity, there's adversary. So Paul is going to remain with the church at Ephesus for two principal reasons. They are opportunal and adversarial. That is, there's opportunity and there are adversaries. Paul simply could not walk away. Pentecost would come at the end of May. And at the end of May, there would be a festival of Artemis or Diana. And this was the time when great multitudes from all over the world would come to Ephesus. And so Paul is saying, "I'm going to stay in Ephesus because at the time of Pentecost, there'll be a huge ingathering of people from all over the world. And there'll be opportunity to teach and preach the Word of God, perhaps to persons to whom I will never have that opportunity offered again. And this church, that is the people who walk in the truth, the people of that way, they're going to need me." Paul even writes of being threatened by and having fought beasts at Ephesus. Paul understood there was a great battle brewing. Paul simply could not walk away from it. His heart was too tender. His spirit was too large. His soul was too sympathetic to leave the church at this time. Because Paul said, "There is no small stir about that way." The word "stir" means commotion, agitation. One translator has put Paul's statement this way: a big blow-up developed about this time concerning the Christians. And I want us to look at that way and the characters that are involved in this circumstance and this story. And perhaps as we read and as we study, we'll learn something for us today. First of all, that way and a man named Demetrius. That way and a man named Demetrius. In verses 24 through 27, we learn a great deal about this man. The business of Demetrius was one of silversmith. He made small models of the temple that had been erected to Diana. And inside this small replica of the temple was a statue of Artemis. Sometimes these were large, sometimes they were small. Sometimes they were small enough to be worn as an amulet around the neck. Demetrius was also a leader of the Guild of Silversmiths. And through his leadership, he provided work for them and perhaps controlled how many each of these men would make. So he was a very important person in the city of Ephesus. And he realized the coming of the month of May was a time when they would make a great deal of money if they could suppress the threat of Paul's preaching. Now, the opposition of Demetrius to that way is sort of predictable. He called all of the workers together and he reminded them of the source of their wealth. Verse 25, whom he called together with a workman of like occupation and said, "Sirs, you know that by this craft we have our wealth." And he pointed out the effect of Paul's preaching on those who would worship the idols of the city. Moreover, you see and hear that not alone at Ephesus, but almost throughout all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away much people, saying that they be no gods which are made with hands. This would shut down their trade, or at least severely cripple it. And the truth that Paul was preaching concerning idols and the fact that they be no gods which are made by man's hands was cutting the very nerve of this trade. He appealed to their civic pride. He said, so that not only this our craft is in danger to be set at naught, but also that the temple of the great goddess Diana should be despised and her magnificence should be destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worships. He calls it the great temple, and he says it would be despised. That means it would be considered to be unimportant, and it would be brought to nothing and counted as nothing in the eyes of the world if this ministry continues. Its magnificence would be destroyed. The world would be shocked. And so it is the thinking of Demetrius that not only as a craft guild, but as citizens of us, city that is cosmopolitan, we have a civic duty to protect this for the world's sake, this great temple to this great goddess. That was what that way meant to Demetrius, a threat to commerce, a threat to the city's wealth. An intrusion into that which had created worldwide acclaim. Demetrius felt about the temple of Diana and what it would do to the city of Ephesus the same way that people feel about horse racing and what it would do to the city of Hot Springs. They're synonymous, or so it seems. And then let's look at that way and the artisans. That is, the men who were actually involved in the craft, in the guild. The Bible tells us in verse 28, they were filled with anger, full of wrath, and cried out saying, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." There was no logical argument to set aside the preaching of Paul, to answer the truths, to try to prove that there was power in the worship of the goddess, the great goddess, Diana. Nothing of this nature, simply the outcry of an enraged mob. Notice, "And when they heard these sayings, they were full of wrath and cried out, saying, 'Great is Diana of the Ephesians,' and the whole city was filled with confusion." Now, here is a deliberate attempt to create a city-wide disturbance. And the word confusion means a mixing together, so it really describes people running in circles to and fro, and many of them not even knowing what this turmoil is all about. There is utter confusion and chaos in the city of Ephesus because the rumor has been spread loudly that our worship of Diana is threatened and our livelihood is on the block. We must do something. And filled with fear and consternation and confusion, the whole city erupts in just a mass of confusion and a cacophony of noise, yelling, "Great is Diana, our great goddess." Now, when this happened, now remember, this assembly is just, it's not at any particular place. It's just in the city. Now, they finally recognized two of Paul's companions, and I'm sure they wanted Paul, and all this is happening in a rather brief period of time. When they located Paul's companions, the Bible tells us that they took them to the temple. They caught Gaius and Aristarchus, men of Macedonia. They evidently could recognize them as Paul's companions in travel. And they rushed with one accord into the theater, that is, into the amphitheater. And this amphitheater would seat about 56,000 people. It's a lot about the size of Memorial Stadium. So these people, there was this continual sound and confusion in the city, and finally they found two of Paul's companions. They grabbed them and they rushed to the amphitheater. Now they have become an assembly. Paul wanted to make his appearance at this time. Paul had stayed in Ephesus, evidently anticipating what was happening. Now he's got the amphitheater. It's filled with people. Now it's time for Paul to make his defense. But the Bible tells us the disciples would have suffered him not. That is, they simply wouldn't allow Paul to leave. Some have supposed that at this time Paul was very ill. We're not really sure. But powerful friends dissuaded him. In verse 31, the Bible tells us, "And certain of the chiefs of Asia, which were his friends, sent unto him, desiring him that he would not adventure himself into the theater." Now these people that are called his friends, chiefs of Asia, are Asiarchs. And these were 10 officers selected by the cities in the province who celebrated at their own cost public games and festivals. Each province had such a group of men chosen, as we now know from inscriptions, to supervise the funds connected with the worship of the emperor, to preside at games and festivals, even when the temple services were to gods like Artemis. So what we're seeing is, here's a is a man like more than a governor. And these chief friends, these are extremely important people. And perhaps they're civic-minded people who are seeing that if Paul walks into that amphitheater, if he goes into that Colosseum, there's going to be bloodshed and there's going to be death. So they said, "We don't want you to go, Paul." And they dissuaded Paul from going in to the temple. Now, it doesn't stop there. These men said it would be an adventure for Paul to go into the amphitheater, which literally means it would be foolish, waste of your life. It's an unthought-out procedure. You'd just be casting yourself on these mad people. So it's a rash thing you're trying to do, Paul, without thought, without logic. And when Paul wasn't allowed to speak, and perhaps there had been some gossip that he would be allowed to speak, the people became thoroughly confused. "Some therefore cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was confused, and the more part knew not wherefore they were come together." Here's a Colosseum, an amphitheater filled with people, and many of them, in fact, the greater part of them, don't even know why they're there. They've just rushed with the mob into this arena. They're confused. They're commingling one with another. And there's a turmoil and a tumult, and they're not sure why they're there. Just a mixture of people all poured together, and all of them confused, and many of them angry and full of wrath. So we've looked at Demetrius in that way and the artisans in that way. Let's look now at the Jews in that way. Not the saved ones, not the ones who are believers, but the unbelieving Jews of the city of Ephesus in that way. They were opposed to idol worship. They had a reputation in the city of being opposed to idol worship, and they feared that they would be attacked after having been associated with Paul, for he had come to the synagogue and he had preached in the synagogue, and many of his converts had come from the synagogue. So therefore the Jews are saying, "We're threatened. We ought to make some kind of explanation to this mob that we're not responsible for what's happening when Paul preaches his message of Jesus Christ as the Messiah and the Savior of the world." So Alexander was thrust forward as their spokesman. And they drew Alexander out of the multitude, the Jews putting him forward. And Alexander beckoned with a hand and would have made his defense unto the people. It simply means that he waved his hands rather rapidly, trying to get these people to calm down and to quiet down so that he could then make his apology, which simply means to explain to them why the Jews in the city of Ephesus were not responsible for what Paul had been preaching. Later on, Paul would write to Timothy in 2 Timothy 4:14, "Alexander the coppersmith did me much evil. The Lord reward him according to his works." And this is probably the same Alexander who was thrust forward by the Jews to state their case. But prejudice has its way. And in verse 34, the Bible tells us, "But when they knew that he was a Jew, they simply shouted Alexander down by repeating over and over again, 'Great is Diana of the Ephesians.'" Now, I want you to think about that rather brief sentence. "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And the way the language puts this, it means that they said it and they continued to say it. And it's very explicit that They said this for about 2 hours in length, crying out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And in this statement, we see their creed. In this statement, we also see their prayer. And in this statement, we see their source of unity. And in this statement, we see their source of wealth. So here is their creed and their prayer and their unity and their wealth and their very reason for being in existence. That which gives them prominence over almost every other city of the world. And they're crying out for 2 hours until they have become hoarse. "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And that was it. That's all they knew about God. That's all they knew about religion. That's all they knew about life and truth and power and glory and honor, salvation. That one statement. Oh, how ignorant and foolish are the men of this world, who prefer the image of a myth to the power of the truth. Oh, Ephesus, how foolish to assemble full of wrath and anger at God's men because they tell you the truth about your relationship to God. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. But we have another character who in this scripture reading remains nameless. But his title is town clerk. So let's look at that way and the town clerk. He was more than the mayor. He was the chief magistrate of the city. He was the most influential person in all of Ephesus, and he drafted the decrees and had charge of the city's money. And with his power, he controlled the assemblies, communicated directly with the proconsul in Rome. And the Bible tells us that the town clerk appeased the people. That simply means that he must have gone into the amphitheater, and this word appease simply means to calm them down. He got them all seated and he got them all listening. Now they're listening at what is to be said. And here's what he said, "Ye men of Ephesus, what man is there that knoweth not how that the city of Ephesus of the Ephesians is a worshiper of the great goddess Diana and of the image which fell down from Jupiter?" His idea is this: everyone knows the city of Ephesus. We're not threatened by these few ignorant preachers of a mysterious religion or a splinter group of the Jews. Everyone knows that this city is the guardian, literally, of the temple that is erected to the one coming down. That is the Deos falling down, the God coming down. And that was just a myth that Zeus, the chief god, had allowed an image of Diana to fall from heaven, and that he'd chosen the city of Ephesus, and that was supposed to have been a great sign of Zeus's confidence and pleasure in the city of the Ephesians to have chosen them as the place where this great God had fallen and come down. Now he said, "We're not threatened by what these people are doing, because the whole world knows who we are and what we do. And he said, there's not anyone that can disprove our position, because look at these facts and consider them. Seeing then that these things cannot be spoken against, you ought to be quiet and to do nothing rashly. He said, you people are excited about nothing. There's no real threat to our city. These are undeniable facts. You ought to be quiet and not rash. The word means rash means falling forward, precipitous, sudden. And then he pointed out in verse 37, they have not really done anything wrong. For ye have brought hither these men, which are neither robbers of churches. Now that word church there is temple, and it means these people have not come and robbed our temple. They're not desecrators of the temple of Diana. They have not taken anything out of the temple. They're not robbing you. They're not taking money out of the temple. And sometimes there was a great treasure chest there. And earlier Jews had been known to pilfer and pillage when they gained control of these cities, as others had done, to go directly to the temples. There was silver, there was gold, and they pillaged them. And yet that the town clerk said, these men didn't come in. They didn't attempt to rob the temple. And then he made another rather startling statement. Nor yet blasphemers of your goddess. They had not spoken evilly of the goddess Diana. But what had they done? If they hadn't come in and attempted to rob the temples, and if they hadn't blasphemed or spoken evilly of the goddess Diana, what had they done? They had preached an exclusionary plan of redemption and an exclusionary plan of service to God. It wasn't that they had attacked the temple. They had attacked the worshipers of the temple, but they had preached an exclusionary plan of salvation. You must believe in Jesus Christ. And Paul had said that men can't make a god with their hands. And I rather suspect there was enough intelligence in these people to know that. But you know, there's not anyone so angry as those who are in false religion. There's never so much a stir as those people who are, by truth, shown to be false in what they worship. And I know something about that, and so does this church. We had a conference on the cults with Brother Martin Canavan several years ago. We ran ads in the newspaper. I was threatened, my family was threatened, over the telephone and by letters, because we had dared say that certain groups of people were cults. There's not anyone as dangerous and angry and as bitter and as threatening as people who are wrong in their religious convictions and know it. Now, you would think that this is going to be the end of things, and I suppose that for quite a long time it was. And the town clerk gave these people some good advice. He said in verse 38 that the courts are open for legitimate complaints. The courthouse is open and it meets regularly. And you can implead, and that's a very strong legal term. He says, and there are deputies, let them implead one another. That is, there are officers of the court. Let them demand their rights. Let these men be arraigned and brought here or to a lawful assembly, implying that this was not a lawful one. But if you want some other matter cleared up or further questions you want raised, then bring it to a lawful assembly, and that means what is within the range of the law, based upon the law, and governed by the law. There is a procedure to deal with what these men may be accused of doing. And then the town clerk pointed out a very serious circumstance, and that is that the city perhaps faced an imperial inquiry into what had happened. And the Roman government was extremely jealous of anything that appeared to be civil unrest or to be a riot. To call in question means to bring a charge about an uproar, and this concourse, a turning or winding together, any dense mass as of men. So what he's saying is, there's a large gathering. We're going to have a hard and difficult time explaining why so many people got together and no one has any papers to show that it was called by the deputies of the court. This thing looks like a riot. It looks like a threat to government. And then the Bible tells us that he ended the matter after his speech by dismissing the people. It seems strange to me when I began to read all these verses and study them that Luke would devote so much attention to them, so much detail to them. And it was really sort of beckoned me to abandon it, make a few points about it, and go on. But as I thought about that way, it wasn't called Christianity yet. It had been called the way. It had been called that way. But I thought about the way and this city. And I thought about that way, quote, that way, and this city. And I don't really see a great deal of difference, except the difference of time, chronos, the difference of 1900 years. But as to the people, attitudes, not a great deal of difference. And as for the church, this church, I see it also in the same circumstance that Paul found himself. And that is, there is opportunity and there are adversaries. We sit exactly in the same circumstance. There is opportunity. If we do not seize it, God will be displeased. There are adversaries to contend with if we do seize the opportunity and walk into the open door. And there's confrontation and accusation and anger and wrath. That's usually directed toward those people who want to live simply and sincerely and truthfully in this present world. But there is opportunity. It seems as though it has slackened and slipped and disappeared. But I know down deep inside my heart that isn't true, as well as all of us know that it isn't true. Our area of the city is changing dramatically. And it has been for the past 4 years or so. And what will happen to it, there are many predictions. And what will happen to us as a church, it's open to question. But I would ask you, stay until Pentecost. Stay until Pentecost. Paul saw the opportunity. and Paul saw the trouble. Paul had his plans made. He was looking to a magnificent journey to the religious capital of the world, his hometown, his place of service as a Jew, Jerusalem, to Rome, the glorious city of Rome, to old friends at Corinth, to old friends Macedonia, Achaia, the collection of funds to take to the poor saints at Jerusalem. Oh, he had a lot of important things to do. A lot of magnificent things to see. A lot of extraordinary work to do for God. But the Bible says that he himself stayed in Asia for a season. Wait till Pentecost. Stay in Asia for a season. For a great door and effectual is opened unto us. Stand with me as we sing.